ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Artificial intelligence is already a part of our daily lives, from search engines to social media. But what's the latest when it comes to AI at work? Hello, Lisa Leong here for This Working Life, helping to make your work life better. From virtual assistants turning up to online meetings to your email program suggesting responses when you reply. AI is becoming more integrated into the way we work, but is it actually making our work life better? How are you using AI at work, whether it's part of your organisation's paid software tools or something you do under the radar? We'd love to hear about it. You can email thisworkinglife@abc.net.au. Now, Jeremy Utley is an adjunct professor at Stanford University. He's co-host of podcast Beyond the Prompt, How to Use AI in Your Company. Hello, Jeremy.
Howdy.
Mark Pesci is a futurist and co-founder of an organisation that helps businesses adopt AI tools here in Australia. Hello, Mark.
Hello there.
Jeremy, so in your experience, where are things at when it comes to the use of AI at work?
I think that there's a lot of hype, and for as much hype as there is, I think it's also probably underhyped. And yet at the same time, there's a lot of fear, mostly due to unfamiliarity. I find that unfamiliarity breeds a sense of fear or trepidation that the moment someone starts to play and starts to explore, usually that fear gets dispelled. And I like to joke, I love to move people along what I call the F scale, from fear to familiar to fluent to fun.
Jeremy, you and I know each other from your career work in human-centered design, and you wrote recently on your blog about a national park officer and the human role of convener, which you say is really essential for this proper take-up of AI. Can you tell us about that story?
Yeah, well, I'm a huge outdoorsman, huge fan of the national parks here in the U.S. I'm going to take my girls camping this weekend, actually, at one national park. And so when the National Park Service called and said, hey, could you, I said, stop right there. The answer is yes. I don't care what your question is. And so I started working with the National Park Service, and I've conducted a number of sessions with backcountry rangers and junior park leaders and facilities managers. And all of that effort has actually been spearheaded, not out of the IT department, but out of the HR department. And I think that's really brilliant because this isn't really a technology adoption curve. It's a human transformation curve. And for HR leaders and L&D leaders to recognize what they need to be doing is cultivating an environment where folks can try new behaviors and ask dumb questions or dumb seeming questions and share use cases and tricks and tips. And so the role of the convener that I describe in that post is really meant to celebrate the very human role that is responsible for driving AI adoption. It's not about a bunch of whiz-bang tools or anything like that. It's really about creating space for, as I said, folks to share what they're trying and honestly ask questions and remind each other of things they're supposed to learn and really start to explore together. And that's the role that the convener plays in that organization.
Mark, where are we at in terms of Australia when it comes to AI use in workplaces then?
I think there was so much hype, particularly last year, that there were a lot of organizations that I was working with who were really very worried that they were behind all of their peers. And most of the time, their peers actually weren't doing anything at all. In fact, these folks were probably ahead of everyone else because they were getting started. So there was that perception that we're going to miss out. We've got to do this right away. And then we asked them to step back and go, okay, why? Sometimes, of course, that's pressure from either the management or the board of an organization because they've gotten very excited about it and they need to see the organization transform. But there hasn't necessarily been backed up with a why. What is the reason to do this? How are you going to be improving the business? How are you going to be improving what the employees are doing? All of those questions, in a sense, got pushed to the side in the race to do something with AI. And it feels like we're coming out the other side of that now. People are having more time and more space to think about, okay, what does it mean for us as an organization if we're going to create new tools? And I think Jeremy lands this very well. This is really about a process of co-creation of new tools, of new ways of working. And that's a considered process. That is not flipping a switch. That takes time, and it takes a lot of collaboration in the organization. And I think that's probably where, particularly maybe in the ASX 20, that's probably where I see them right now, is they're at the beginning of that process of thinking this through. And that will then start to filter down further into other businesses across the country.
So are employees being told how and when to use AI at work then, Mark?
More likely, and hopefully more frequently, engaged in a collaboration around when is it appropriate, when is it not appropriate. Policy is very much a good starting point, because then the organization decides, what do we want to be when we're using AI? And where does that put the red lines about where we will and will not use it? For example, legal firms are looking at AI because it can help them look at lots of documents simultaneously, find all of the threads that they may be presenting in a case that they're going to be making before a court. They can do this, but they also have to be very clear with both the client and the court that AI was involved in some of the preparation here, because that level of transparency is necessary. And that may also mean that there are certain types of materials and certain types of presentations to the court and to clients that you simply don't use AI for. And until you've thought these things through, you don't really understand where your red zones are. And the worst thing that can happen is you do it and it gets you into trouble because you didn't think about it before you did it.
Jeremy, is there a bit of a tension here between analysis paralysis? So we're setting out the policy, we're figuring out how and when we're going to use AI, and actually just giving it a go. You've got to try it before you can truly understand it.
As with many things, there's a cliff on both sides of the narrow way. And I think there's a narrow way to do it well, and there are dangerous cliffs on both sides. I would say a danger is starting with, let's craft the rules. And, you know, I recently conducted a several week long AI bootcamp for a professional sports organization here in the US. And after the bootcamp, one of the individuals asked if he could have a phone call with me. And so I hopped on the phone and he said, hey, I just wanted to tell you, this was really different from what the organization and what the league had done for us. I said, how so? And he said, well, the league and our team's training was really how not to use AI. And you taught us how to use AI. And so I would say that there's a lot, while I acknowledge the dangers of haphazard and irresponsible and reckless use, I think leading with rules probably is amping people's fear. You know, I would say I'm working right now with a large multinational organization. And when I talk with folks, the primary reason they haven't really tried anything is because they, quote unquote, don't know what's okay. And the reason that they are leading with that response is because every correspondence from the senior leaders of the organization emphasize, do not upload confidential or personal, you know, always in brackets. I'm seeing these emails. And I think right now, actually, there's some, what is personal information? What is confidential information? I guess I'll sit on the sidelines and do nothing until all of this is really clear. So I don't think you should start with what not to do. I mean, within reason, right? Be adults, be reasonable, don't be an idiot, okay, granted. But use precedes use case, right? And the reason most people haven't thought of radical ways or interesting ways even to leverage large language models in their day-to-day work is because they aren't really playing. They aren't really trying anything.
Mark, could some employees be actually using AI under the radar and not disclosing because of these focus on rules and beware, et cetera?
We already know that in almost every organization that's been surveyed, there's an enormous amount of, we'll call it clandestine AI use, whether that's happening through the computers that are provided in the office or it's happening through a mobile or computers at home. And this, again, has been one of the big issues. I have clients coming to me and going, how can we know whether an employee has just downloaded a new app or has hit a website and is using it in their normal workflow? But of course, it's using AI, and so therefore it's taking our files and digesting them. And it's that idea of this leakiness there. And while I appreciate Jeremy's comments about the ability and the necessity of play, because I do think that is also foundational. I do think we have at the same time that awareness that just having all of the toys out there doesn't actually give anyone who's fronting up to that toy a sense of how that toy is actually going to impact them. And it's not just what emerges from you playing with the toy. It's also a statement about how that toy has been designed on its back end. And there's very little transparency right now. And that makes, I think, employers extremely reluctant to simply go, yes, just everyone have a play. It's because the degree of transparency they would need to feel comfortable with that sandbox is not really there.
Jeremy, do you have a response to that?
I agree. I think the most dangerous thing an organization can do is just let people play with free tools, you know, because those are least secure and there's least guidelines. With enterprise tools, organizations are able to establish kind of secure parameters. I think definitely there's a balance that's required. This whole shadow use is a real issue. And I think the irony is organizations that want to be safe are basically, you could say they're driving their employees into the arms of another lever, so to speak, by being unclear or by not providing tooling. And they're ironically pushing their employees to do the most dangerous thing.
Now, Jeremy, you talk to many, many people at the forefront of AI adoption in businesses. Can you give me a specific example of the way it's being used that would blow my little mind?
I mean, just go back to the National Park Service as a great, easy example. One of the rangers there, you know, non-technical. Okay. I tried to shout this guy out on LinkedIn. Homeboy doesn't even have a LinkedIn account. Okay. So that's like how not technical this person is. And in my session, I ask, hey, what are dreaded workflows? How would you finish the sentence, at my job, it sucks that, ... you know? And one of these individuals said, it sucks that whenever I've got to replace the carpet tiles, I've got to fill out a bunch of paperwork that includes ADA, protocol and OSHA standards and ANSI and cultural heritage documents and preservation standards just to replace the carpet tiles in the lodge. And so he actually built, with natural language, he built a tool that looks up all of the relevant, you know, research and compiles a statement of work proposal. He said, typically, to request a statement of work for any kind of work in a national park takes 3 days of paperwork. This tool that he built takes him 2 hours. He performs that task. He probably performs 10 to 20 statements of work a year. So in 45 minutes, this guy built a tool that's going to save him, you know, 30 to 60 days this year. But here's the thing. There are 430 other national parks, and someone shared his tool around. It's estimated his tool, literally built it in 45 minutes, is going to save the National Park Service 7,000 days of human labor this year.
I love that. Now, Mark, what are you finding are the different kinds of AI you're seeing being used in workplaces across Australia?
I'm actually going to have to jump just a little bit out of Australia and talk about one that I just saw in Papua New Guinea. So I got to be a judge of an innovation competition in Papua New Guinea last month, and we gave the prize for big business to NAS Fund, which is basically their big super fund over in PNG. And we're like, well, what did they do? Well, they took their process for dealing with accounts receivable. These are the invoices coming in to be paid by all the vendors that they work with over in PNG. And those invoices are often handwritten, or they're barely entered into a computer with a little bit of data, because even in PNG, mobile phone penetration is only at about 39%. So it's a relatively undigitized culture. And because of this, these invoices were stacking up and stacking up and stacking up and not getting paid, or getting paid 2 or 3 months later, which of course is very bad for the vendors with those invoices. And so what they did was they basically applied AI through the entire process, first to be able to take those invoices in and clean them up so that they could then enter their normal accounting system, and then to take it through the accounting system all the way to payment. And what they found was that it cut the amount of time between an invoice being filed and an invoice being paid to just a few days from a few months. And it also took 40% of the work away from the folks who were doing all of the accounts payable at NASFund. So it was good all the way around. And all of that's not even particularly heavy, sophisticated use of generative AI. There is generative AI there, but that was stuff that we probably know how to do well 2 years ago. It's just a really good implementation of it. And it looks like something that's also very easy for other businesses in PNG and Australia to copy around their own accounts payables so that they can also speed up the way vendors get paid.
You're listening to This Working Life on ABC Radio National with Lisa Leong, and my guests are Jeremy Utley, adjunct professor at Stanford University, and Mark Pesci, who's a futurist and co-founder of an organisation that helps businesses adopt AI tools. You're getting a sense of where things are at with AI adoption at work, and up next you're going to hear about some hurdles and how to avoid them. How are you using AI at work? I'd love to hear from you. Email thisworkinglife@abc.net.au. Jeremy, give us an example of how we might use maybe even setting up an AI agent to help us with a common work problem so that we can look at those prompts again.
Okay, this comes from Bryce Shalamel, who's the head of AI at Moderna, who was on my podcast recently. And he talked about how there's no more individual contributors at Moderna. Literally 7,000 person organization, there are no more individual contributors because every person has been augmented by AI. And so now every person is themselves and then a team of four other people, their assistant, their expert, their coach, and their creative partner, all of whom are AI. But now he's running an organization of teams of five where humans work with assistants, coaches, experts, and creative partners to produce work product. And he gave the example from his personal life. I love this story of how he worked with these various intelligences in his life. He talked about he has two children who are in school, and it's the dreaded parent-teacher conference season. And he said, historically, this is a dismal experience for me and my partner because we've got to sit through 8 meetings for each of our kids and then try to piece together learnings and then try to communicate with our children and reinforce stuff that we're hearing. And he said, this existence of my augmented abilities dramatically changed my own experience this year. He said, so for example, I had my AI assistant accompany me to all of my parent-teacher conferences and listen. And not only was the assistant capable of taking notes, between each of my 16 parent-teacher conferences across my two children, I got my AI coach to coach me on how to ask better questions of my kids' teachers. And then I got my AI expert to coach me and to give me guidance on how do I make the feedback that my children's teachers are giving me understandable to a 12-year-old and a 14-year-old. And then I got my AI creative partner to design conversation prompts and table games for my partner and I to engage our children at the dinner table in a way that develops them according to the feedback we've gotten from their teacher. When you start to think about these roles, expert, coach, assistant, creative partner, and one of my favorite roles, which is AI expert. And I don't think people realize the extent to which they can ask AI for help, right? So yeah. If, for example, custom instructions, how do I write custom instructions? Ask AI to interview you and craft custom instructions for you. How do I create a custom GPT? Ask AI to interview you in order to recommend instructions for a custom GPT. Literally, almost anything you can think of, you can get AI to help you. And I think especially when it comes to AI, it is so far beyond most people's kind of paradigm to think about asking AI. Like I'm sitting in a cabin literally in the middle of the Redwood Forest, and I have so many experts at my fingertips now. Literally, all I have to do is think to ask. Again, going back from tool to teammate, when you start to think about, wow, what would Adam Grant think about this? I can ask him. Yeah, I mean, Adam is quite responsive on email, by the way, but like I can actually invoke Adam and his expertise to the point. Sometimes you ask these, like I talked to Guy Kawasaki about this. He goes, I trust what ChatGPT says Guy Kawasaki would say more than what I would say. And I'm Guy Kawasaki.
Now, Mark, the newer versions of some of these AI chatbot models are actually apparently hallucinating or making stuff up. Can you talk to us about that?
This also includes the people who create these models. We don't actually have a truly transparent understanding of how they generate their responses to the questions or prompts that we put to them. And we know that it's all highly statistical and, you know, they've digested trillions and trillions and trillions of words to do this. But when they're making a path to generating a result, we know that they're trying to sort of go with the most likely, the most predictable response. But there are points where that seems to, for again, reasons we're only just barely starting to understand now, run off the rails. And we call this a hallucination. That's really not the correct term. It's actually a type of error in the program, but maybe it's also inherent to the way that these large language models work. And they've bedeviled the field from its inception. And this is where I would caution people about when they put a question to a chatbot, which is not in an area where they have expertise, and the chatbot responds confidently, how can they be sure that that response is in fact accurate unless they can refer to a human expert who can then fact check the chatbot? One of the things that we know is that the latest generation of the models that were released by OpenAI, the company behind ChatGPT, for reasons they cannot explain, have higher rates of hallucination. And so we have to understand that that's the kind of environment we're working in. And one of the things that I've been telling my clients is, yes, it's artificial intelligence, but the other thing that AI stands for is always imperfect. And it's okay if we understand that to be the case. It allows us to sort of work with it as this intelligence. And I think Jeremy's got some great ideas there about how to do that, but with the correct guardrails for ourselves on it.
What do you see then as being the next big challenge in AI adoption at the workplace?
It's going to be less about, here, we're going to write an email for you or do this for you. It's going to be much more about an employee sitting down and thinking, and very much like the folks who Jeremy was working with, the National Park Service, how do I take this really weird, odd, difficult task and make it a lot easier? How can I take that task and automate it? And hopefully we're going to be able to empower the employees in the organization to build, to experiment, to play, and to build these little augmentations, these little AI things, these little programs or apps, whatever you want to call them, that will do things for them that will make their lives easier. Because it feels like if we do that, then the organization gets a win. It's only 5 or 10%, but there's going to be a lot of those little wins across the organization. And people also feel like they're invested in it because they're building the tools that they're using to help themselves do better. And if we can create a virtuous cycle out of that, then what you'll see is a lot of bottom-up invention and innovation happening in organizations.
Love that. Thank you, Mark Pesce.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jeremy Utley.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Jeremy Utley is an adjunct professor at Stanford University and co-host of podcast Beyond the Prompt, How to Use AI in Your Company. And Mark Pesce is a futurist and co-founder of an organisation that helps businesses adopt AI tools here in Australia. Our AI expert, Jeremy Utley, has some really useful tools on how to get started with AI at work. So we want you to give it a crack on Try This.
Use AI to use AI. So one really simple thing anyone can do right now, you can literally, even if you want to record this, get ready to hit record, folks. You ready to hit record? If you hit record, you can just use my voice because AIs can take voice input. But you can basically say to the AI, hey, you're an AI expert, you know, whatever it is, ChatGPT, Gemini, Claude, Copilot, Grok, you name it, right? You're a Grok expert. I'm trying to figure out how to use Grok in my blank, in my parenting, in my actuarial practice, in my soccer coaching, right? I would love your obvious and non-obvious suggestions. Would you please interview me as a Grok expert, asking me one question at a time about my responsibilities or KPIs or workflows until you have enough information that you could make two obvious recommendations and two non-obvious recommendations. Please start whenever you're ready. If someone will do something that simple, their mind will be blown and they'll get off the starting blocks.
Thanks so much, Jeremy. Please give this a go and share how you went. Jeremy is dying to find out how you go, so email thisworkinglife@abc.net.au. Thanks for listening to This Working Life with me, Lisa Leong. And if you haven't already, search for This Working Life on the ABC Listen app and tap the heart to follow all of our stories. This episode was produced by Michelle Weeks and engineered by AJ Bradford. We're on the lands of the Wurundjeri people in Naarm, Melbourne. Until next time, love your work.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.